Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back into the Illini Inquirer podcast. Let's chop it up with our guy, Mike Latua, Illini Inquirer basketball analyst, former Illinois guard, Wright State guard as well. And Mike, we're talking about a team that's on a little bit of a winning streak. I know it hasn't all been, you know, great looking, especially with what happened at UT Rio Grande Valley at the State Farm Center. But this was a pretty feel-good win against Notre Dame. I know it got close towards the end, and Illinois had to make free throws to end up winning that game, and Alfonso Plummer did a great job of doing that. But that felt like, with Trent Frazier back, and we got to give him a lot of praise for this, you know, with Jacob Grandison back, we haven't seen the full team yet, but it's starting to feel like, hey, maybe they're settling in a little bit. So what were your takeaways from the win over Notre Dame?
You mentioned a feel-good win. And why, right? You know, why was that a feel-good win? And I think it's because if you look at the box score, if you watch the game, I didn't really think it was a situation where it was like, wow, this Notre Dame team is so bad. They have some pieces, you know, they have some really, really good pieces. And I thought, you know, given all the uncertainty that Illinois faced pregame, you know, leading up to that game, they needed to come out and play with an edge. And I thought that they played with a better edge than probably any game that they've played with, played in this year. It was just evident right from the tip. Maybe part of that is just is the State Farm Center rocking a little bit, but I thought they not only started that way, but they sustained it. When you make shots early too, that ends up happening, but you go through the entire game. It wasn't a mistake-free game. You know, they didn't play the perfect game. I think that's what everyone sets out to do, but they didn't play that perfect game. But when you play hard, when you play with an edge, I'm telling you, man, like, you will always, always give yourself a chance.
Yeah. And, I mean, this wasn't a Purdue game, right? Like that we saw last night where that team looks like the number one team in the country. We'll see if they can beat Iowa. Illinois has not been that yet. And they obviously have not been a complete team quite yet. The other part I think we're remembering, Mike, here, is you got the nation's potentially best player, right? Maybe 1-2, whatever you want to do, a Timmy, 3-4, I don't know. But you just have a force inside that he's the reason you have a chance to compete at the top of the Big Ten. He's the reason you're a no doubt, I'm still going to say it, no doubt NCAA tournament team. He's the reason like every other team has a disadvantage, right? When you go, and I'm including Purdue in that with Zach Edey and Trevion Williams, as good as they are, and they are way better than Illinois out on the perimeter, like Kofi Coburn is an eraser on the inside, and he's a big man leading the country in points right now. That probably won't hold, but it could. I mean, he's going to be one of the top scorers in the country, just completely dominant against Notre Dame, had no answer for him. I know it's UT Rio Grande Valley, but 38 points in that game, that's not common. I mean, it's one of the top 15 scoring performances in Illinois history. So he's back, the big man's back, and boy, it's fun to watch him operate. He's gotten immensely better around the rim, finishing, Mike. His touch is so much better. There are still some things defensively he needs to improve, but offensively and rebounding wise, he's just a juggernaut.
It's seriously, I mean, there's so many superlatives that you can throw in there for Kofi and adjectives to describe him. And I'm just so impressed with him, man. And it goes beyond the box score. It goes beyond watching it and seeing just how dominant he is. I'm impressed with his consistency. And I think a lot of his consistency you can attribute to, like I said, he's the biggest guy on the floor. We all know that. But there's been plenty of big guys that have played in college basketball. Part of his consistency is his attitude. And part of his consistency is his body language. It's always good. Like, there may be some bad calls sometimes, and and you can see it, but that's any player. But for the most part, he plays with a smile on his face. He plays with joy, and you will always give yourself a chance to be successful when you play like that, when you're focused on the right things, when you're focused on your teammates. I saw Trent Frazier make a turnover in the game, and Kofi walked right over and put his arm around him. Like, that is a guy that, even having all the accolades, right? Even having the National Player of the Year spotlight, having, you know, the year that he's putting together thus far, like, he still pours himself into his teammates, because I think he knows that he can attribute a lot of his success to his teammates. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes the whole dynamic really, really neat. And it's a dynamic where you look at the impact of him leaving, and what that would have looked like if he did, and how appreciative we should all be as a, you know, as fans or as viewers that he did come back. 'Cause it's great for this Illinois team. It's great for college basketball. And I think it's great for the kid. You know, and I hope it really does lead to more people choosing to go that route, because Kofi Coburn did not hurt his stock by coming back. If anything, you know, the way he started this year, he has certainly increased that. And his teammates are a big reason for that. And his attitude and his body language is also a big reason for that.
Yeah, I'm looking at this, 26 of 35 shooting the last couple games. He started 10 of 11. And towards the end of the game, he started to force a little bit. But his free throw shooting looks back to freshman year levels, which is a really bad thing for teams if he can keep that up. Because if he makes 65 to 70% of his free throws, man, the efficiency for him, you can't hack him maybe at the end of games. And his rebounding still remains good. He draws a ridiculous amount of fouls. But you're right. I mean, Brad Underwood says he never has a bad day. And it's so valuable for Illinois to have that kind of consistency, because, you know, a guy like TJD, you know, Trayce Jackson-Davis kind of been up and down in his career. Maybe he's figuring out now in his third year, but Kofi certainly brings that. Got to bring up Trent Frazier, man. I was texting before the game. Are they trying to, you know, psych out Notre Dame that Trent might play? Came out kind of limping, you know, ran out of the court about 30 minutes before. He plays 32 freaking minutes with probably bone bruise. I think DeMonte said that and leaked that a little bit the other day in an interview, bone bruise. But what a gutsy performance. And Mike, what was the impact of Trent being back on the court? Because didn't light up the box score, right? 7 points, though, 6 assists. But what was the impact of Trent Frazier being on the court?
Well, the impact is he's the point of attack defensively. And anytime you have an offensive team that is trying to get into their action, that is trying to, you know, especially late, they went with Wesley with the high ball screens. But early on, you could see his impact immediately. They struggled getting into things and getting the looks that they wanted. And there's something about having him on the floor that creates this team confidence. I think both offensively and defensively, you can count on him offensively to play the right way and move the ball and take good shots. But defensively, the dude just covers up so much. For those of you that'll stick around for the film breakdown, we'll have a little bit of that in there. And he just is such a difference maker on that end. But he's such a difference maker just for, like, you know, people talk about heart and soul of the team. You know, if people talk about that ad nauseum, and it's true. People talk about it because it's true. You know, Brad Underwood talks about it because it's true. There's something about having that guy there, even if he's in the building and on the bench, it's different when he's on the court. Mm-hmm. You know, it's different when he's out there. And credit him, you know, he doesn't start. He comes off the bench in this particular game. And you're dealing with an injury, a knee injury, which, you know, you talk about knee, you talk about backs, like, those are typically the most debilitating injuries. And I said it during the game, like, still not getting screened. Like, it's just ingrained in him. And I think when he finishes up his career here, and people, I think maybe it's like this super senior year is starting to give people a little bit more of that perspective where it's like, man, what he has given to this program is nothing short of remarkable. But you see him maintain that hunger and not kind of rest on his laurels a little bit. Like, he's just a I want more guy, and not from a role perspective, because we've seen him have to sacrifice in that regard a little bit. But he's an I want more guy in terms of I want more for this team. I want more for this program. And that starts with his fight, that starts with his tenacity. And I think it trickles down to the rest of the team.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of all think of Andres Feliz in those terms, but it feels like Trent Frazier's finally starting to get that kind of appreciation. You know, Chester Frazier was one of those guys, too, who, you know, the career didn't always go well, but everyone kind of knew him as this warrior, and I just think he'll be a fan favorite forever for what he's doing. He's going to be a big part of this season, and, you know, thought that he could be out for a month here, Mike, at best, and now to have him only really miss one game, especially with what's going on with Curbelo, that's big. I don't want to gloss over Jacob Grandison either. Three huge threes, four assists. You know, defensively, Illinois struggled a little bit, right? I mean, Notre Dame still got 1 point. I think it was 1-2 points per possession in that game. But what did Grandison add by him coming back? I mean, having those two guys, it was noticeable. You know, DeMonte didn't have to play the point. Some of these other guys could play kind of smaller roles or their normal roles.
Well, it's another guy that knows his role. Yeah. You know, and we'll probably touch on that here in a little bit where it comes to identity and how you can maximize your abilities as a team when everybody maximizes their abilities within their role and knows exactly who they are and what their role is and what their limitations are. And that's something you have with Jacob Grandison. He's a catch and shoot guy that can occasionally go off the bounce. He's a guy that keeps balls alive on the offensive glass. He's a guy that fights defensively. You know, he's not the quickest guy in the world, but he finds a way to use his body in ways that, you know, that benefit this team both offensively and defensively. So you can't have a shortage of those types of guys and the impact that they have. And, you know, I thought in the UT Rio Grande Valley game, that was kind of part of it. Like, I really thought that having a Jacob Grandison in those types of situations would be huge. You know, and then not really having a lot of practice time, it's just, it kind of shows you the mentality of a guy like that, a guy like Trent Frazier, where it's like, who cares? It's game time. Let's go play. You know, once you start falling into like the, I was sick, I was this, like, you're talking yourself out of playing well. And he was 3-for-4 from three. He kept balls alive. He took care of the ball. You know, I think he had 4 assists as well. You look at this team in general. I mean, they had 12 turnovers, 6 of those, you know, 6 of those were from big men, and 6 were the primary ball handlers, the guys that have the ball in the hands majority of the game were had the other 6, and you can combine 150 minutes between all of them. So that was one of the more encouraging things as well. But Jake, it starts with a guy like Jacob Grandison who really knows his role, knows his identity, and knows his limitations. You really can't have enough of those guys.
Coleman Hawkins, first three games, Mike, 14.3 points, 9.3 rebounds. Next three games, 6.3 points, 4 rebounds, 2.3 turnovers. Underwood is hard on him, right? And you can tell because he thinks he's going to be really good. He's got a really high ceiling here. He's not locked in defensively. Lost Wazowski, I think, the first couple plays. Just can't have that. He needs to be more focused, locked in defensively. Does bring good energy. Made a huge play, put back late in the game. Is this just typical sophomore playing a bigger role stuff? Because it just feels like these are the growing pains he's going through right now, right?
Yeah, and I think, too, you're talking about 19, 20-year-olds that probably, and I would guess that Coleman Hawkins hears the talk of he may be the best pro prospect on the team. You know, he may be, you know, you have guys like Chad Ford, you know, tweeting out NBA draft stuff and putting out sleepers, and Coleman Hawkins is, you know, like, you'd be crazy to think that guys don't see that or hear about it, or a dad's reading it or like a cousin's reading it and telling you about it. And you just got to find a way. And I'm not saying that this is what Coleman Hawkins is doing, but settling into exactly who you are and what your role is. I'll keep going back to it. Like, I think Coleman Hawkins can have such an impact on this team, being a stretch four, stretch five, pick and pop, occasionally get to point A, point B with the ball. Don't feel like you have to be a decision maker. That clearly is not his strength thus far. And he's finding that out, right? Like, this team, as they started this year, the turnovers, like, typically you contribute turnovers to guys not knowing who they are yet. And then once that happens, the turnovers come down. But I thought his, you know, kind of ball batted around, grab it, laid in to make it 71-63. That to me, that was a play of the game. Like, yeah, that was what sealed the game in my eyes. 69-63, they get that rebound, come down. Dane Goodwin hits a three. You're talking a one possession game. So taking that from 2 possessions to 3 possessions in the time that he did. But then also factoring in, hey, you know, 17 and a half minutes in the first half and you're on the bench with two fouls. Really, really hard to get back into rhythm there. And credit Brad Underwood, because he draws up a lob with 18 and a half minutes left in the second half. And that's just coaching. That is just smart coaching. Hey, here's our guy, Coleman Hawkins, who hasn't been in a rhythm. Let's get him an easy one. You know, like, yeah, I know we have Kofi Coburn going, but the reason that play worked was because Kofi Coburn was one setting the back screen. So credit to Coleman Hawkins for kind of sticking with it. Sure. Like, wasn't a mistake free game, but he's going to continue to learn about himself and grow. Like, you can't expect this to just be instantaneous. You know, you can't expect to watch like an orange and blue scrimmage and be like, I mean, like for me, like me and Ravonte Rice led an orange and blue scrimmage in scoring. We both had 17. That didn't mean that I was going to play 35 minutes of point guard. So, you know, you give some time for the development. And I think he really, I mean, I say it over and over again, but the sky's the limit for this kid. Yeah. And the more he can rein that in and be focused, like he missed some closeouts, right? And like even in that 2.5 minute stretch before he got his two fouls, missed some closeouts, offensive foul, you know, like, but we always say you want to be able, you'd rather have to rein a guy back in than kick a guy in the butt to play hard. Playing hard isn't Coleman Hawkins' issue. It's finding out who he is.
Yeah, it's playing smart, right? I mean, and that's, yeah, he's obviously a really intelligent basketball player. It's just, you know, figuring out what he can do and what he shouldn't do on the court. And he's got to be on the court. I mean, the first two games ago, he sat the last 8 minutes because he wasn't defending very well, right? So those are the things you want to see next steps for him, and we'll see what he can learn from it. I do want to ask you defensively, you know, Notre Dame was able to get going, especially in those ball screens with Wesley late in the game. What issues do you see there? Because obviously stopping the ball has been a big issue for them early in the season.
Well, Wesley's a future NBA player. I'll tell you that much. And he was really under the radar. I have a buddy that's strength coach at Purdue, and evidently Jaden Ivey, this is why I heard about Wesley. Jaden Ivey was like raving about him. So when I was talking to my guy at Purdue, we just happened to be on the phone the other day, and he's like, "Hey, this Wesley guy. I'm hearing really good things, you know," and I had seen the numbers and stuff, but watching him, his explosiveness, that's just a really good player. And that they went relentlessly to that high ball screen with him. And it was working, because you take Trent Frazier out of the equation. Even if he gets through the screen, it's still advantage Wesley, depending on how he cuts the corner. So it really ended up being Kofi defending one-on-one with Wesley. And you ran into some issues there. And I thought they did a better job towards the end of the game of being able to execute. But, you know, he scored 14, 15 straight points like he did, and they just went to the same action. So, you know, it's difficult, and you need to find ways to mix it up. But I thought given the scenario, you know, you're down 12, you're down 13, like there's just not a lot of pressure there, and comebacks happen. I think that what ends up with the thing I was most impressed with was when it was really nut cutting time at the end of the game, they executed pretty well. Mm-hmm. Sans the free throw block out where everybody thought it was a two shots and it was 1-1. Other than that, like I thought they stemmed the tide a little bit, where you can lose momentum quickly in a basketball game. And then they kind of went back to their calling card, their defense, you know, but it is going to start with that point of attack, right? It is going to start, and not every team is going to have a Wesley getting downhill like that. But you'll see in the film breakdown, it's not just Kofi and it's not just Trent in that ball screen coverage. Like the guys that are on the wings, the guys that are in the corners have to be active enough to kind of make you second guess getting fully downhill. Maybe you stunt and stay and get the guy to pick up his dribble. I thought Plummer had a chance to do a few of those things. But it's a unit, right? Like it's not just they try those middle ball screens because they want to isolate that middle of the floor. We talk about the middle third of the floor. Isolate that middle of the floor so you don't have help on the wings and in the corner. And then you just have like this 2-on-2 game almost with Kofi. And I thought they managed it pretty well. Wesley's a really good player. But you're right. It is something to shore up. And you know, I think Kofi can continue to make strides in that regard. And the better he can be in ball screen coverage, I think kind of determines the ceiling for this team defensively.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The wait is over. The Chi returns with new episodes on Paramount Plus.
What brings you to the show?
Opportunity.
Everybody get down!
Walk right up to the sun.
A new rain is coming to the South Side.
Never should have sent a boy to do a woman's job.
The Chi. New episodes now streaming. Visit ParamountPlus.com/The Chi to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with the Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. The subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
All right, Mike, I have one positive of all of this unknown of these injuries of Hutcherson being out, Grandison, Frazier. It's Alphonso Plummer getting his confidence, man. Like, this guy is 3 of 11 shooting, but they need all these points, right? And in three straight games, he totals, or he's averaging 24 points during these last three games. They need this. They need this kind of scoring burst and somebody that can, like, take advantage of all the attention that Kofi's getting. It seems like the shooting from him is contagious because the rest of the team, he didn't shoot all that well against Notre Dame, but his teammates sure shot pretty well, and they don't seem to be afraid of pulling the trigger. Man, he's feeling good. He chucked a little bit, but made all those free throws at the end of the game, 8 of 80s, 16 for 16, I believe, this season. They got him going, which is a really good thing after those first three games.
Yeah, I think when you have men down, you start to wonder, right, who's going to step up, who's going to fill that void there. And I think the most impressive thing about Alphonso Plummer is that he's kind of done it just being Alphonso Plummer, which is awesome, because then when you bring Andre Curbelo back, it's not like, hey, Plummer's been succeeding because he's been so ball dominant. And once Curbelo comes back, the ball's out of his hands, is production going to dip? His production might not dip. I don't think he's going to be 24 a game, but I think the 13 a game that he's at right now is actually pretty realistic with the volume that he can get just based off his off-the-ball movement, based off the way that teams are guarding him now. And I think you're starting to see Brad Underwood put him in a lot more of screening situations, which is awesome. The better the shooter you are, the better the screener you have to be, because you're going to free your teammates up. And if they do help, then you're freeing yourself up. You saw late in the game, they were going to a lot of Plummer back screen action for Kofi, which is awesome. Like, Kofi stand at the free throw line, you go up back screen for him. They are going to stay glued to Plummer, and Kofi's going to come off free, not always for a layup, but for a deep post touch. And those are things that you can see. Like, I keep going back, we'll break it down in the film, but you can see how they're starting to utilize those two in particular. And the beauty of it is those two don't need to dominate the ball. So you can still bring in, like I said, a Curbelo that can dominate the ball, but also has these pieces around him that are so efficient not having the ball in their hands. So I've been really impressed with him. It's just, there's not many players like him in college basketball where you really look, and when he catches the ball and shoots it, kind of like, there's no way that's missing. Like, it always looks good. And I think when it always looks good, they're never like bad misses or kind of out of position misses. And it's the reason why Kofi Coburn got 4 of those back. Mm-hmm. He was 3 for 11, but Kofi Coburn, it might've been 5, but I think it was 4. He got 4 offensive rebounds off of Alphonso Plummer misses. And you can't say enough about a guy that now you can see, like, the scout is out. Like, he is moving his way up the personnel chart. Right. And I think the more that he moves up the personnel chart, the better that is for Illinois, because the more defenses are going to key in on him, and the more it's going to free up more room for Kofi to operate, more room for Curbelo to operate. Like, it's funny how the beginning of the season has played out, but I actually think getting Plummer going like this, and you almost kind of hate the way that it happened,
right,
because all these guys down, but it's going to really bode well for this team moving forward. And he's been really impressive.
Yeah, that's what the non-conference is all about, Mike, is trying to get a team, gelled, figure out roles, what you can do, what you can't do, how you fit into a team. And they're still behind everybody else in the country in that, right? Because Curbelo, whenever he comes back, we're not sure when, then you got to figure that out. But as you were saying, Curbelo was playing with this team for a stretch when they had Kofi. They didn't have Kofi. He played his best, I thought, even though the stats weren't ridiculous, against Kansas State in the 20 minutes he played. So where do you think this team is at in, and figuring all that out. I mean, we got two Big Ten games here before the non-conference resumes. Arizona obviously coming to town. So three huge games. You hope Curbelo is back at some point. But where do you think this team is overall and just figuring out what it is before January really hits and that huge Big Ten stretch of 18 straight games starts?
Well, how do you judge a team, right? Like if you go from the beginning of the season to the end of the season, like how do you judge a team? Do you judge a team based on how far they went in the NCAA tournament? What type of postseason berth they got? How the regular season went? I mean, I always pose the question, what would you rather have? The Illinois team last year that was a one seed and won the Big Ten tournament and got bounced by Loyola, or the Syracuse team that, you know, barely snuck into the tournament?
Can I answer this?
Like, yeah, go ahead.
I determine a coach success, a team success by conference finish. That's how I do. Like, I know the NCAA tournament matters the most. It's what we remember the most. But I think a good program, you determine by what they do during the conference, because let's be honest, like this is not baseball or basketball or hockey where you have a whole 7-game series to figure out who right. the best team is. That is a better determination of who the best team is. What we love about the NCAA tournament is the randomness, right? You get that in single elimination tournament. The NFL, we get that as well. But there's a lot of times I feel like the Super Bowl champion isn't the best team. And there's a heck of a lot of times when I think the NCAA champion or the Final Four doesn't represent like who the best teams were that season. So in my personal opinion, even though every fan thinks last year was not a success or ultimately a success because the NCAA tournament, that's the best year Illinois had since 2005. And there's no question because they dominated for most of the season.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. And I'll piggyback off of that and say, you know, obviously to put a bow on this in a sense, it's growth. That's how you judge a season. Like, did we grow or did we not grow? Did we regress? And I think for this team, you're already seeing whatever the expectations were before the season or what they were. We've had some, like, obviously there's been some extenuating circumstances, guys out, but like, has this team grown from the Cincinnati game or the Marquette game to the Notre Dame game? Mm-hmm. Yes, they have. And what do you attribute that to? What I attribute that to is what I've said previously in this particular podcast is guys are figuring out who they are and how to be successful in the roles that they're in. There isn't this like wondering of, man, can I do, like, I can be this guy on this team. And when guys are out, when guys are down, that can creep into your head a little bit, right? Like, oh man, I'm RJ Melendez. I'm starting. That means I have to get X amount of shots up and, you know, this is my game to put up 12 to 14 and show that I should stay in the starting lineup. And you watch RJ Melendez and RJ Melendez just played like RJ Melendez. Mm-hmm. You know, catch and shoot, open threes, attacked when he attacked, was relatively solid defensively, you know, used his length. That is who he is, no matter if he plays 2 minutes or if he starts and plays 18. It shouldn't change. And I think guys are starting to truly realize that. I thought that was the strength of last year's team. I made that point last year. And I think I said it a lot on podcasts. Like, this team knows who they are. Damonte Williams knows who he is. Damonte Williams has had a much different role, quote unquote, where Curbelo's out and now you're like the pseudo point guard, but he still played like Damonte Williams. That doesn't mean you have to like break guys down, call for high ball screens, you know, make crazy reads. He was the point guard, but he was still Damonte Williams, which is just make the easy play, knock down open shots, play hard, keep balls alive. It's a team sport. You're the sum of your parts. I don't care how the roles change. You're always going to be a sum of your parts. And if those parts can figure out who they are and master that, right? Like, I think that's Andre Curbelo when he comes back. I think Coleman Hawkins is getting there. Like, if I were to rank all of them by like who knows who they are and who doesn't so far, Coleman Hawkins probably is at the bottom of that list right now. And that's nothing against him. He's just that talented. He's just trying to find out what works within this team.
Right.
And Curbelo's the same way. When he comes back, it's like, well, now I thought of myself as being like the scorer now that Io's gone. But if I'm not really that, I can still score, but like I can also facilitate because that's what I'm really good at. And those guys, that's all going to take form. And ideally, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, they started doing this like early Big Ten play game. But typically the first Big Ten game was like New Year's Eve, right? And you give yourself a little bit more time before you get into conference play. But it's here now. So, you know, I think the Notre Dame game was a great precursor or a great start you know, of guys knowing their role, and it's just integrating the rest of these guys and getting them up to where you have a full unit of guys that know who they are, and that's when you become really dangerous.
Well, and isn't this team set up, Mike, to where it's Kofi is the focal point, right? And then everyone else kind of shares in that score. Like, I'm just talking offensively. Like, everyone else has to share in that scoring. Like, Curbelo doesn't need to average 15 points a game. Coleman Hawkins doesn't need to average 15 points a game. Like, there could be a game Jacob Grandison's second in scoring, Trent Frazier second. You know what I mean? Like, this team, like, it felt like a preview of me, to me, of playing inside out, Kofi's double teams, getting two assists, you know, passing the ball up, you know, four or five times and creating so much gravity, as we use that word over and over again, to where all these other guys have open shots. And if they're shooters like Brad Underwood and these guys have seen all offseason, it's a difficult team to guard. It's maybe not as good as Purdue is guard wise and shooting scoring wise, especially with Jaden Ivey there, but there are shades of that. There's so much gravity around Edie and Trevian Williams that if you have three or four guys who can shoot around him, it's just really difficult to cover.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see when Curbelo does come back into the lineup, you saw how far the scale was tilted towards high ball screens with Curbelo in the game when Curbelo was playing, and how much it was tilted a little bit more towards other action into high-low for Kofi in this Notre Dame game. So what's that balance going to be when Curbelo does come back? I think there does need to be a balance. You can't have all one or all the other. So that's to me, that's going to be the question. And honestly, I think the more that the more that you kind of give those steady doses to Curbelo of like high ball screens, and because realistically that's how you can get high low opportunities too. Like it all ties in together. But that's just the kind of stuff that I'm looking for, right? Is when Curbelo does come back, what is the formula? Like, I thought the formula in this particular game against Notre Dame was like, hey, we either got Kofi at the front of the rim or we're shooting threes, catch and shoot in rhythm threes. And both of those are high percentage looks. So you don't need to reinvent the wheel, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking to see what this team's identity becomes offensively when you have all the parts back and they're all clicking. Cause I think you're going to have a little bit of everything.
Oh. All right, Mike, what are you looking for against a Rutgers team that did beat Clemson, not a good Clemson team, beat them at home. I guess it's Jersey Mike's Arena now, not the Rack anymore, but that's a really good home advantage for them. They don't shoot it very well. Geo Baker's been out, so that should help Illinois. Omaruri was really good last night, but he's going against Kofi this time. So going to be a little bit tougher of a task. We know what Ron Harper Jr. did to Illinois last year, but Illinois dominated in the Big Ten tournament, right? So you got that game, and then an Iowa team, man, that might be better than we thought, especially with Keegan Murray doing what he's doing, his younger brother Chris playing really well. Bohannon's still there. They can score. So next two games, before I talk to you again, what are you looking for?
Well, let's start with Rutgers. You know, what I can almost say for certain is that we're not going to have another 91-88 game like there was last year in Piscataway. This is a Rutgers team that has struggled mightily offensively, and quite frankly, in parts has struggled defensively, which is pretty unlike a Steve Peichel team. They're offensively, like I said, they haven't shot the ball well. They just haven't scored it well. They don't shoot free throws well. But the one thing they do is take care of the ball. But I think the one thing that's really holding them back right now, and you always go back to teams that can't shoot the ball well. Okay, well, what's the issue? When you don't have a real post presence, like a true post presence that you have to account for, and you don't have a point guard, you know, if Geo Baker's not the one breaking guys down and if he's out for this game, how are you getting the defense to commit, like to get open shots? So then most shots become lower percentage shots. So if you're Illinois, it's let's stay out of rotation and let's continue the trend for Rutgers, right? Let's continue making them shoot low percentage shots. Because if Geo Baker plays, they still have Ron Harper Jr. And we know Ron Harper Jr. is liable to make five or six threes in a game. Like that's not out of the question. So I'm looking at these next two games because these are the positions, the successful positions for these teams offensively are kind of in that spot that you kind of question defensively for Illinois. right? Is it, and I'm looking at Coleman Hawkins, like this is going to be a good litmus test for him, is you got Ron Harper Jr. and you got Keegan Murray. So who do you stick on those guys? I mean, I thought last year down the stretch against Ohio State, DeMonte Williams did really well against EJ Liddell. So maybe you have that type of matchup. It's going to be by committee. Maybe it's a Jacob Granison. Maybe you just, you rotate guys onto him, but this is a really, really good test for Coleman. You got some really good, small forwards, power forwards that you're playing against. But look, Mulcahy's still there. Mulcahy won them the game in Piscataway last year. Just doing his dirty work, keeping balls alive, getting guys frustrated, technical fouls, and he's still there too, right? And so this is a team that has won. Like, this team has won games. The guys that are on the floor have won games. So this is not going to be a rollover type of game. But if Illinois can do what they did offensively, which is feeding the big man, taking high percentage catch and shoot in rhythm threes, and just being solid and taking care of the ball, and then on the other end forcing those low percentage shots, I like their chances. And then same thing with Iowa, right? You can't get Murray going early. You can't get him going at all, honestly. I mean, he can get it going at any point during the game. And then same thing with Bohannon, right? Bohannon, another guy that's liable for 4, 5, 6, 7 threes. I think if you shut those two, I don't want to say shut those two down, because that's likely not going to happen. But if you make other guys beat you, I like their chances in that game as well.
Mike, love it as always, man. If you want more Mike Letsuip, we're going to do a VIP film room right after this, breaking down the Notre Dame game. But Mike, Big Ten plays here, then it's Arizona. It's getting hot and heavy here. And then a little bit of a break as the non-conference continues with a couple lower-level teams. But we're going to learn a lot more about this team over the next couple of weeks, and we'll talk about it next week, man.
That's right. I appreciate it, man.
Great stuff as always from Mike Letsuip. And if you want more great basketball analysis from Mike Letsuip, the VIP film room is now up as well. And Mike basically just takes us through what it's like as a coach with his players, breaking down film, probably a little bit more positive than a coach would do through some of the film room, but a great breakdown of what happened against Notre Dame, the good, what Illinois can improve on as well. So great stuff from Mike. And he will be with us throughout the season, breaking this down both on the podcast and in our VIP film room. So we're really, really lucky to have Mike and be able to pick his brain. He's just been a fantastic addition to all of this at Illini Inquirer. All right, the latest on Illinois basketball, Illinois football, a lot of stuff in recruiting going on. Had a lot of updates on that side, both class of 2022 prospects and diving into the transfer portal a little bit. And boy, that transfer portal, deep waters of transfers there right now. And Illinois, of course, interested in many upgrades at many positions. And Brett Bielema and his staff are busy on the recruiting trail. So we got you taken care of all over on Illinois football and Illinois basketball at IlliniInquirer.com. So check it out there. Of course, whenever there's news, whenever there's a game, we're here to break it down here on the Illini Inquirer podcast. So give us a follow, give us a rating review wherever you get your podcast. It really helps us out. It's been awesome to see all you Spotify listeners giving us a shout out with your Spotify Wrapped. Seeing how many hours, minutes you guys are spending with us throughout the year. It's been really cool because I know, I have certain podcasts I follow and listen to all the time, and it just, you're a companion, right? So thanks for making us a companion, whether it's your drive, your walks, your workouts, whatever it is. Glad we could be a part of that, make it a little bit better. So appreciate all you guys for following along, and appreciate you VIP members, man. We had over 150 new VIP members over the last month, and that support has just been awesome. It's been great, and that's why we bring guys on like Jay Lehman, Michael Tulip, to make that VIP experience even better. Joey Wagner as well in the last year. We're trying to make you guys that VIP subscription the most valuable thing that you have. So glad you guys have all signed up for that. Until next time, everybody have a great day. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Hello, everyone. It's Mike Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean, outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.